M23 fighters say they are pulling out of a town in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. But an earlier promise to withdraw from another town was called a sham by the Congolese army. Conflict has forced many people to flee the region, and a UN investigation has documented widespread human rights abuses. So what are the prospects for a lasting peace? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Laura Kyle. Hopes for peace or another false dawn? That's what people are asking in Democratic Republic of Congo, where M23 fighters have pledged to leave Rumangabo. That's a town with a large military base in the east. But the Congolese army says a similar pledge to quit another strategic town, Kibumba, in December hasn't happened. Since the M23 group emerged more than a decade ago, conflict in the country has killed thousands of people. It was dormant for some time before returning a year ago, taking control of territory. Hundreds of thousands have been forced to flee the violence, and the UN says human rights abuses are widespread. Rwanda is widely understood to support the M23, but it's something Kigali denies. Patrick Muyaya Katembwe is the Minister of Communication and Media for Democratic Republic of Congo. He told Al Jazeera he believes the latest promise by M23 forces to pull out will be fulfilled because of the extent of negotiations involved beforehand.
We strongly believe that at the end of the day, Rwanda, because Rwanda is the one acting beyond M23, will finally respect the whole commitment we made together following our meeting in Rwanda and following the recommendation made by all countries, starting by United Nations, United States, French or Spain or Germany, all those countries we've been condemning Rwanda and asking them to respect what they agree on Rwanda process. It's a bit tough in the ground, but strong belief that it will be done. That's the only way we can avoid using our forces.
We'll be discussing the prospects for peace with our guests in just a few moments. But first, Catherine Soy reports on the hopes raised by the M23's latest promise of a withdrawal.
This is a very significant move in Eastern DRC. This military base that we're talking about is very strategic. It had been taken over by M23 rebels. They were using it for their logistics and operations. And what has been happening is that M23 rebels have been withdrawing from some of the territories that they had been occupying. They say that this is because of a goodwill that they want to show the government, because they want to negotiate with the government. They particularly want to go back to agreement that was made several years ago, which included integrating the rebels into the army. Now, we have spoken to government officials who are saying that this will never happen. A civil society groups that we've been talking to say that they are skeptical, because on the one hand, M23 rebels are saying that they are committed to withdrawing from these territories that are holding. But on the other hand, we are also seeing ongoing fighting between M23, the government, and militias that are allied to the government. So many people are saying that they are still fearful. People are still being displaced. People are running away from their homes. We spoke to a man who tried to go back to his home village, but then it was impossible for him to do that because of the security situation. So he had to go back to the camp. So the situation is still very fluid indeed.
Well, estimates of the numbers who've been killed in violence in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo since the late 1990s vary, with some saying more than 5 million people have died. Many groups have been engaged in fighting, notably the March 23 movement, or M23. It's a rebel military group based in the eastern areas of DRC, mainly in the province of North Kivu, a region rich in natural resources. Its leadership is made up of members of the Tutsi ethnic group. They say their aim is to fight groups founded by Hutus who fled Rwanda after the genocide in 1994. The rebels merged with the Congolese army under a 2009 peace deal, but in 2012, they said the agreement had not been upheld and broke away. More than 120 other rebel groups also operate in the region. Well, let's bring in our guests now. Jafar Al-Khatanti is a reporter based in Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC. He joins us via Skype from Goma. Joining us from Nairobi is Jean-Moba Senga. He's a DRC researcher at Amnesty International. And Felix Ndahinda, who's from DRC, is a consultant and researcher focusing on conflict, peace and justice in the Great Lakes region. He joins us from Tilburg in the Netherlands. A very warm welcome to all of you. Jafar, is the withdrawal of M23 from Rumangabo, is it going to happen?
We don't have much information on what is going in Rumangabo, except the communication from M23 and from the East African Community Regional Force that M23 is leaving the city today. But as the EAC didn't want journalists to cover the ceremony, we still don't have much information at the moment. Maybe later we will get it. But on ground here in Goma, many people don't believe in what is going on because last time in December, M23 announced his withdrawal from Kibumba and the regional force accompanied them living in Kibumba, and media covered it. But then when IDPs from Kibumba decided to return back in their city, they found M23 in Kibumba. So people in Goma think this is a joke, it's somehow to joke with Congolese people. Let's know the world that M23 is leaving the occupied area, and for sure they are not moving for anything.
And Rumangabo is a strategic town, isn't it? It's a military base there. And indeed, it's just 1 hour's drive from where you are in Goma.
Yes, Rumangabo is important, and it's a bit far from Goma, but in the same province. And Rumangabo, for North Kivu, is the biggest military base. So when FRDC lost it, what was their biggest base, it was like someone who lost his capital city for FRDC. And if M23 will leave Rumangabo, for sure, this will be a big news for Congolese people. And this is what Congolese people are waiting for. Mm. But they don't trust, because when they said they are leaving, they leave Kibumba, they didn't leave Kibumba, as people say.
Felix Ndahinda, why would M23 say that it is leaving these places at this point in time?
I think there is a coalition of factors that may make that happen, I guess. First, in recent weeks, we saw images of Congolese officials meeting with officials of the M23, and something that had been most of the time advertised as something that would not happen, M23 having been framed as a terrorist group and so on. But we see Congolese official army commanders and meeting with M23 involved in some negotiations which have been kept more or less secretive. Now, and we know that this was more advertised by M23 rather than the official Congolese government. Now, the other part is, of course, we have already the presence of the regional force through the East African Community force, which are there to monitor, but also representing some kind of pressure, even if they are not being yet forcefully operational. And third, of course, we saw quite a number of pressures, indeed, in recent condemnations by quite a number of Western countries, especially towards Rwanda as supporting M23. So quite a number of coalition of factors that may mean that probably that withdrawal might end up happening. It might not necessarily be today. Mm. But with that in mind, we keep this in mind, the fact that Rumangabo is one place, but the territory that M23 still occupies is quite large. And if I remember quite very well, and my colleagues probably can counter on that, but if I remember correctly, Rumangabo was occupied as after an initial attack by the Congolese army, which was trying to take over territories occupied by a counteroffensive on territories occupied by M23, but that counteroffensive failed. So in that sense, M23, I think, was also already stretched, and I doubt whether it had the capacity to occupy all of that territory. Mm.
Jean Maubert, whether or not M23 actually withdraws from these areas, we must bear in mind, mustn't we, that they have been defeated before and they have lain dormant only to re-emerge again. What's to say that's not going to repeat?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. 10 years ago, M23 captured Goma, and then they withdrew from Goma, from the town of Goma, before they were attacked and defeated militarily from other towns around Goma. So whether they withdraw or don't withdraw from Rumangabo and Kibumba, the question that we have to ask ourselves is, why did they capture these towns in first place? So what has been solved? They have been calling for negotiations, direct negotiations with the DRC government, which continues to refuse to sit down with them. The Luanda communique, which M23 says is implementing by withdrawing from these towns, said they should go back to the areas around the border with Rwanda where they were based by November 2021. Mm. And under that condition, the Congolese government may consider engaging in talks with them. So we are still far from there, because while they're withdrawing from the outskirts of Goma, they are also capturing new cities and new towns in the north, near the border with Uganda. But at the end of the day, the question is really addressing the causes of M23 and other armed groups in Eastern DRC. And so far, we are still extremely away from that objective. And these causes include, from our perspective, the necessity to address the endemic impunity for crimes committed in DRC over the past 26 years. But also making the DDR program, the disarmament and demobilization program, work. And also addressing other concerns, including local governance of land, natural resources, identity, and other issues. So as long as these issues will not have been addressed, they might withdraw, but they could actually come back later on. Mm.
Jean Maubert, you bring up an awful lot of points there. Let's pick up the point of impunity. Jafar, hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced by this latest fighting, horrific reports of rape, of slaughter. But this is abuse that people have suffered in this area for decades. Why do these crimes happen with impunity?
It's a very complicated situation because, first, DRC has ethnic problems since long time, and all ethnic group has its own militia, and they call it a protective local defense force. So M23 as a rebellion, which is supported by Rwanda, as what Congolese army say, is an enemy of all militia in the region. So there is not... If I can a bit come back, many people talk about a coalition of government soldiers and militias. That coalition doesn't exist, but there are some militias which are called local defense militias who are fighting against M23, to protect their own communities, what is not a good thing, because FRDC won't manage to fight against M23 and against militias. And one more thing, you know, this situation is also becoming complicated to the Congolese government, because during the Nairobi talks, all militia was invited, such as Nyantura and Mai Mai group, but M23 didn't attend. Mm. And I think that this withdrawal is a way to push the government of DRC to a negotiation table with M23, because they're still fighting in other cities. Like yesterday, they took the control of Nyamirima, and the day before yesterday, M23 was fighting in Kisharu. So they are fighting in other places, and they are leaving some other places.
Okay.
So I think this is a technique of M23 to call the government of Kinshasa to negotiate with them.
Okay. It also seems to be quite effective at not allowing the central government to take control in eastern DRC. And I wonder, Felix, if that is part of the problem here. The government in Kinshasa is so far away and it simply doesn't have control over this region. It's imposed a state of siege since May 2021, a state of emergency in effect, and yet it still hasn't brought the situation under control, Felix.
I mean, every kind of rational analyst knows that many of the problems you have been discussing now, but also that we have been discussing about the DRC over the last more than 20 years, have really to do with the weakness of Congolese institutions, including the central government in the first place, but also the local government kind of units at the provincial and even lower levels. The fact of the matter remains that you have all of these troubles, M23 or the 100-plus other armed groups that my colleagues already talked about and you alluded to as well. We have these because of the void that created by the state, which has been simply incapable of exerting that monopoly of violence that we know is the prerogative of the state. Beyond the monopoly of violence, of course, is that the state has just been really pretty much at the center, and even at the center, it's quite very kind of weak and involved in intestine kind of struggles. And much of the Kivus really has constituted the peripheries. And they have been the peripheries, not only even in the last 20 years, but when I look into academic kind of work that I use in my own work, it's even before, under the late years of the Mobutu era. So because of this absence of state, of course, as the last speaker just said, you have the proliferation of these armed groups, which fill the void. And unlike him, I like a little bit to contradict some of the points that he has made. There's a lot of independent reports that have documented how the government on and off, or either as a policy or individual kind of members of kind of sort of mafia within even the army, do supply weapons and sometimes intervene in collaboration with some of the armed groups. Mm. Because there are certain given narratives also that function. For example, there is this issue that Jean-Maubert mentioned about identity issues, about autochtones and allochtones, people who belong, who do not belong. Those are prominent narratives in North and South Kivu. And we know now it has been denounced by the UN. A lot of Kinyarwanda-speaking population are all kind of summed together as being M23, and they have to be shipped out of the country. There have been quite a lot of acts of targeting specific communities, even if members of other communities suffer in all of this prevailing chaos. So with that in mind, the state really has been part of really the problem of being unable to exert power, exert control, and have institutions in place which do the basic function of a state,
so,
equal protection, equal rights, and equal, let's say, prerogatives. And,
so, Jean-Maubert, to throw into that mix, the East Africa community is now going to send a regional force with troops coming from various other countries. Is that a good idea?
So is it a good idea or a bad idea? I wouldn't be able to answer that question, at least from our perspective as a human rights organization. But it is clear that there is no military response to the situation in Eastern DRC. The problem in Eastern DRC is preliminarily political, and also, you know, as I said, in terms of human rights, you know, addressing impunity, which concerns many people in DRC, but others also in the region, in Rwanda, in Burundi, in Uganda, and other countries that have been involved in the conflict in Eastern DRC, in the DRC for the last three decades. So the problem being political, it should also be addressed politically. But this doesn't mean these endless and useless talks like the what we saw in Nairobi a couple of weeks ago, which seems like a joke. It has to be serious, you know, identifying the real problems and dealing with them in an effective way. Because in the past, we have seen political agreements signed, sometimes guaranteeing impunity for these criminals, and that has not allowed the situation to improve neither. So while the solution should be political mainly, it should also be taken more seriously, drawing lessons from the failures of the past. Now, on the military side, it's the state's prerogative to use military force and even to invite foreign countries to intervene. But our only demand as a human rights organization is that any use of force should be done in alignment with international law. So whether it is the Congolese Army or M23 or the Eastern African Community Regional Force or even the UN peacekeeping mission, they all should abide by the international law and prioritize protection of civilians.
Absolutely. And on that note, Jafar, we haven't really touched on the UN peacekeeping mission at MONUSCO. It's been there since 1999. It's one of the world's largest and most expensive missions. Why has it failed to keep the peace?
The UN mission, I think they failed because they changed many times their mandates, but nothing was done for sure for the population. For example, in 1998, when MONUSCO came, there was fewer than 100 armed groups in DRC, but nowadays, we have hundreds and more groups just in the eastern part of DRC. And as now people have a mistrust of UN, I don't think they can succeed anymore because no one like them in eastern Congo. If you talk with local people, you see that they all don't believe on UN. And I don't think they can succeed when locals doesn't trust in them. And now with the East African Regional Force, if their mandate was a bit different than what they have, because as said Mobel, since they came, there is not anything of military engagement from the East African Community Regional Force. And all locals of DRC was expecting on that. Because when coming, people of Eastern Congo thought that they come to fight, to engage against M23 and other rebel groups. But now they are talking and not fighting. And at the same moment, fighting still ongoing in other regions, in other territories and other provinces.
And Jafar, we do have to leave our discussion today. Apologies for interrupting you there, but we have run out of time. Jafar Al-Khatanti, Jean-Maubert Senghor and Felix Ndahinda, thank you all very much for joining us today. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website. That's aljazeera.com. For further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Laura Kyle, and the whole team here, it's bye for now.